You're listening to the Infinite Loopback Podcast, an Apple-themed technology podcast hosted by Brian Baggett, Jim Graham, and Brad Tarver. Good morning, everyone. How are you doing this week?
Doing great. How are you?
Tired.
Good morning, podcast listeners.
I stayed up till, in an uncharacteristic move, I stayed up till 2 a.m. playing Rainbow Six Siege on my PC with a buddy, so I did not get my morning workout in yet. I slept in late. That's unusual for me.
Nerd.
I stayed up watching that new show last night, The Defiant Ones. Pretty good show.
Who's in that?
It's a four-part miniseries about Jimmy Iovine and Dr. Dre and Interscope Records and all that. It's a pretty cool show.
Yeah. What about you, Jim?
Did some work yesterday and just kind of messed around last night. I drove most of Friday night, so Friday was a crazy travel day for me because my dog and car were still in Mississippi. I flew from St. Louis to New Orleans. I drove from New Orleans to Gulfport and picked up my dog and then drove to Dallas and got home to Dallas about 3 a.m. Saturday morning.
Fun times. All right, well, let's jump in. So I found an article, and we didn't talk about this a couple of weeks ago because I guess we had other things going on, then we took a week off. But Joshua Topolsky on The Verge had tweeted that the iPad Pro and iOS 11 were inferior to a laptop in almost every way unless you like to draw. And I found this a really weird sort of statement to make because it's one of those things where if you can't see past your own use case, then it's a really dangerous thing to be in if you're reporting on technology. So there are podcasts and blogs of popular tech writers that I stopped listening to or reading because it was clear they couldn't see past a product that they had no use for. And an example was a podcast I listened to a couple of years ago when the new MacBooks came out, and the person making the show really wanted a MacBook Air with Retina. They go out and they get a MacBook. It's not essentially a MacBook Air with Retina. They rage quit it, return it, and declare it crap. And it's like, well, what did you expect? It's kind of like I want a sports car and I bought a Ford Fiesta, and I'm disappointed that it's not a sports car.
So was Topolsky one of the guys? Was he more of a PC guy when he was on Engadget, or was he sort of agnostic as far as PC or Mac went? Because that just seems a real PC kind of thing to say.
He's been around the block, that's for sure. I mean, yeah, like Brad said, didn't he start way back at Engadget and then help form The Verge? And I think The Verge is a good site. I don't read it much, but, you know, I think they've done a really good job covering a lot of different stuff. I like a lot of their non-computer posts, but I don't know. I agree with you that if you can't see the forest for the trees, don't report on that kind of stuff.
Well, it just strikes me as odd because, I mean, I know this is on Twitter. It's a hot take or whatever, and I get that. But it's also indicative of you're a person of a certain age, and you're making a sweeping statement that is going to seem hilariously dated at some point. It's going to be like, you know, the old Bill Gates, no one will ever need more than 640K of RAM type of assessment. Because what I see is that I look at like my nieces and nephews who are kids, and they have no problem doing things on tablets and phones, particularly on tablets. Like when my nieces come to visit, if I give them both like a couple of cheap Fire tablets, they will sit there engrossed for hours doing things. I don't think that if you took people who were kids today or kids in the last 5 years and said a tablet's not a real computer, they would look at you like you're insane. Like, what do you mean? This may be my only computer. And that's what I think going forward. That's going to be the computing paradigm for people that are a lot younger than us. So to make some statement like, this iPad Pro and this iOS 11 are inferior to a laptop, I just don't see it. I've been using it for several weeks now, the betas, and honestly, it's great for everything that I do. And I mean, we all do this to some degree. I mean, there's always going to be some piece of technology that comes out and you put on your old man hat and you're like, I don't understand why the kids like this. I get it. But I completely disagree with him on this. And one counterpoint that I would like to add to that is for a while, you know, not to get inside baseball on the podcast, but editing audio is what I normally do on my Mac every week. Every episode that we've had, I've done that. But this week I actually did it on Ferrite for iOS, and I was blown away by how good that was. A $20 app on the iPad is better in some cases than, at least for my use case, than Adobe Audition or, you know, Logic Pro. I mean, it does a great job stripping silence, truncating, you know, tightening the audio. And it's almost, it's unbelievable how well it works for a tablet app. That was the thing I kept thinking to myself is like, how am I doing this on an iPad when this is something that's normally pretty tedious for me on a Mac? And it did great. So I think there's this mental block people have that, oh, it's not a real computer. It's going to be inferior to a Mac. But I completely disagree with that.
Well, right there is like it's proven kind of your old man tendency wrong of I could never do this on an iPad. And here you go. You found an app and you're like, wow, this is crazy that I could do this on an iPad instead of just I always did it on my Mac. But you also had the you were willing to try to do it instead of just saying, oh, you can't do that on an iPad. You would never do that. You know, and you tried it and you're like, wow, you know, that I think that's maybe your point about Topolsky here is, hey, don't just dismiss it. You know, there if this is what you do for a living, you write about technology, then maybe try all this stuff out and, you know, give it a chance, man.
Be objective, I think. Brad, what were you gonna say?
I was gonna say I do the old man thing a lot when my wife says something about, well, this website won't load or something. I'm always the first one to go sit down at my computer instead of trying to figure out, you know, why it might not load on her phone or her tablet.
So in what oh, so you won't, it works fine on the computer. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. You know, and we talked about before having that small space to see a website, like if you click on a link or touch a link inside of Facebook, and then there's the ad and the bar and then some other crap, and you literally have about an inch and a half of website where you would normally have, say, 4 inches of website if you had loaded it inside of Safari browser versus loading it into a, you know, quote, full browser on a PC or Mac.
A real computer, man.
Well, that's a good segue into the next thing that I wanted to talk about. So Apple is cracking down on VPN-based ad blockers that work in third-party apps. I didn't even know that this was a thing. I'm glad that it exists, but I didn't really know that people were doing that. Were you guys familiar with this?
I had been doing that before. There was a game I was playing for a while called Word Cookies or something. It was sort of a... You know, it gives you a block of squares and you fill in the letters or something and you get a, you know, it tells you there's this many words in this block of letters, you know, figure it out. And about every fifth or sixth turn, it would load an ad, which got really annoying. And I think they fixed it to where it would do it, say, if you wanted to, say, remove ads or something. Anyway, I could go toggle on like the Opera VPN app. And even though I was on my own Wi-Fi, I mean, I could just toggle that on and it would block all the ads. They wouldn't even try to load it. It wouldn't say try to load a screen and then it disappear. It never asked again. And at some point the ads went away. So I just quit doing Opera before I opened Word Cookies.
So when I read your show notes this morning, your response was my exact response when I saw this yesterday. I had no idea this was a thing. I mean, that literally, I laughed when I read it because that was my exact thought as well. That I knew you could do this with, you know, your network at home or, you know, you could block certain things and do it like that. But I didn't know that it was being done at an iOS level where you could install an app. And then if you're not familiar, listeners, if you're not familiar with how this would work, is the app would actually install certificates on your iPhone that would start do the VPN so those ads can get loaded. And I would have never thought to do that. I didn't know there were ads that, you know, apps that would do it. So I was pretty shocked. And I, on the opposite end of the spectrum, I was not shocked at Apple shut it down, because it's definitely one of those misuse cases of trying to use this technology for something that it was not intended. I applaud them for doing it. It's pretty ingenious, but I also am like, yeah, you had to know when you did it that it wasn't going to last.
I did put in notes too that I've considered doing sort of a similar thing with the ad blocking proxy server on a Raspberry Pi called Pi-hole. And it looks pretty neat. I don't know if you guys got a chance to click on that in the notes for the week to take a look at it. But basically, it's the same thing. It runs on a Raspberry Pi. You can run it out of your house. It looks kind of nice. I think I may give that a shot. Is that something you'd ever consider doing, Brad?
I would take a look at it just to see. I mean, it would be kind of neat to be able to block ads on the entire network. Because I know, say, my son runs Adblock or uBlock Origin inside of Chrome on his Windows PC. I don't really know what he does on his MacBook, but the ads are definitely annoying to me. If they pop up on anybody else's browser, it's hard for me to not want to install an extension just to block it, you know, and say, I did this for you, you know, but it's one of those things that people might consider to be annoying or obsessive.
I, unlike y'all, have not ventured into the Raspberry Pi world, so I don't think I would go that route. I do run an ad blocker in Safari, the one blocker, whichever one that runs on iOS and Mac. That's the one I've been running for a while now. So I wouldn't go the Raspberry Pi route, but it sounds pretty neat. And I can definitely see one or both of y'all trying that out. Y'all probably got one of those things in every room of your house or about to.
Yeah, I think it's worth a try. I think I'm going to give it a shot, and maybe I'll run it at home since I have the 1 gig up. It would be acceptable, I think, for me to try it from somewhere else. I'd have enough bandwidth going up and down that if I access it remotely, it would be okay, I think. Just to see, you know, if it has a practical effect. I often get worried about doing stuff like that because I'm afraid that will negatively impact something that I need to load. I see that sometimes with ad blockers inside of your browser where you need to access something and you can't because you have to go and you have to hit reload without content blocker because it's blocking some form or some element that you need. And you have to go, is the website broken? Is it the browser implementation? I don't know what's happening here. And that's a little annoying, but I think I may give that a shot.
I've gotten so used to, like you were talking about, with the form element not loading or some little button not loading or something because it's built into something that the ad blocker may be blocking. And it may be third party. It may not be, you know, generated directly from the website, but it's some like third-party Java library they're using or something. Anyway,
I've run into that too, like Ticketmaster.
I've gotten so used to, you're right about Ticketmaster. I've gotten so used to immediately going and whitelisting that site, even if it's just for 5 minutes for me to get whatever I need to get done, finished.
I guess that is a use case for having it based out of your browser than having a sinkhole built into your network. That does sound, you know, kind of neat, like, my house is impervious to internet ads because everything goes through this little bitty box over here in the corner.
Well, the advantage, too, is if you're running it like a VPN in your remote, you could just turn off the VPN, and that would be analogous to whitelisting a site. So you could turn off the VPN, hit reload, see if it works. If not, go back to the VPN. But, you know, one way or the other, I think I'm going to give that a shot and just see. That I think that'll be good fodder for a future episode, just to see.
I'll throw something in here that's not in the show notes. So I think I linked to it a while back, but there was a big article, and I thought it was really good, about buying these old repurposed like terminal app server things from businesses. And like it said they were cheaper than Raspberry Pis on eBay, or as cheap, and so much more powerful. It's basically like a little Linux box that would tie back into a Windows terminal server and just serve Windows up on people's desk. That actually looked neat to me. It was like, you know, just because I've used them at client sites where it's just a little box on the desk that pretty much shows you like it's running Windows, but it's not. It's just a terminal services app. That the fact that they said they were, all kind of companies were liquidating them on eBay and you could get them super cheap and they were, you know, more powerful, faster, et cetera. That would be kind of neat. Brad, you any experience with that? I see you nodding your head.
In the industry, those are called thin clients, and they basically have a little image burned on them, and you could toggle between, say, a web browser and a remote desktop session, and you basically attach a USB mouse, USB keyboard, and a monitor to it. Some of them will have two DPI ports on it, so you could put a dual screen DPI monitors on it. So if you were running in, say, a radiology lab, you could pull up x-rays on both displays and whatnot. But yeah, they'll have a dual or a quad or even an 8-core Atom processor in it, and you can upgrade the RAM and replace the mSATA with a larger mSATA or even with an SSD, because it still has a SATA on the board, and turn it into a really powerful solid state computer. They're pretty neat and can be picked up for $5 to $15 on eBay.
If you'll remind me, Brian, I'll try to find something and stick a link to that in the show notes. I think I added it to my Instapaper at one time, so it should be there.
Yeah, that would be good. I would like to link to that. So let's talk about Safari being the fastest browser for the Mac in the new version of macOS Sierra. You know, I will ask, you know, we informally ask one another, hey, what are you using? What are you using to browse the web? And I think Brad and I are mostly Safari people. And I like to mess with Jim about it because I always go back to Chrome. I always go back to Chrome.
I've actually been in Safari for a while now. I still use Chrome on Windows, obviously, because I don't have any choice. But I'm in Windows less and less these days because I can do more and more on the Mac side at work. But yeah, I've been in Safari for a while. I just use Chrome for plug-in stuff that I can't do in Safari, so that way I don't have to install Flash and things like that. So yeah, the thing that I really like about using Safari and that makes me end up switching back, I do think Chrome is faster, but still.
Even when it's demonstrably not. What is this? You denier.
I know. It's a fake news. I like the bookmark syncing and the syncing between my devices and my Mac. That way, if I had something open on my iPhone, you know, I can pull it up on the Mac, or if I, you know, all my bookmarks are the same. And obviously, there are solutions out there that'll sync all that stuff up, but it just introduces a level of complexity that it just doesn't work sometimes. So, yeah, that's why I'm with Safari.
You know, it's funny. I used to, you know, I keep Chrome around mostly for things like Hulu or HBO Go. But what I've noticed, and I know that they're pulling Flash from Chrome, right? It's no longer going to be embedded. But when I go to Hulu or I go to HBO Go on Chrome on my Mac right now, it goes, the version of Flash is too old. Upgrade now. And I don't keep Flash on my Mac because, again, it's Flash, right? It's always usually bug-ridden. It needs to be updated constantly. It's an attack vector, so I never usually install it. But, yeah, it's even the one that's in Chrome. Now I have no reason to keep Chrome around if I can't go and view certain things inside of it. I might as well just go and delete the whole thing, which I'm thinking of doing off of my Mac, off of both my Macs, because I just don't need it if I can't use it for that. That was the only reason I kept it around. You guys run into that, or do you keep Flash? Do you install Flash on your Macs?
I don't install Flash, and I was using it the same way you were using it. Whereas, if there was something I really needed to use Flash for, I would just open Chrome. But you're right; I do get that message sometimes where it says you need to upgrade your version of Flash, and I just think, well, I just don't need to see that website, and I go on to something else.
I open it on my PC, which also does have Flash installed because, well, you know, it's already Windows. So
I can't remember the last time I installed Flash on a Mac. So I've done it on Windows. I can't remember downloading Flash on a Mac. I guess I just assumed that I was always going to have it in Chrome. And now that I know that I'm not, I guess we'll cross that bridge when it comes.
Yeah, most of the time, like Brad, if it's something that requires Flash on the Mac, I just go, I don't need it. Though, you know, it is worth mentioning that in some cases, not all, but in some cases, you can go and enable developer mode and tell the website that you're Safari on iOS, and if there's an HTML5 version of that site, it will get served up to you. So that is something you can try. It may not work for something like Hulu or something like that, but worth a shot. In some cases, it will. Can't hurt.
It can't hurt. It's better than installing Flash.
That's for sure. So, made a couple of purchases this week. One of the first things that I bought this week was the Anker PowerCore Plus 26800 PD, which is a real mouthful and not really an intuitive or nice name. But the reason I bought it, I found an article over on iMore that talked about having a battery pack that can charge an iPad Pro or a Mac, a MacBook. And that was something that I've been missing. So as I travel, I don't travel a lot, but when I do, I usually take one of my Anker battery packs with me. And as I depend more and more on the cellular iPad, I had no option to charge that as I use it. So one of the things that I notice when I'm on a plane is let's say I'm watching something on my iPad and I want to keep it charged while I'm doing it. If I plug into the in-seat power or I plug into my battery pack, I can sort of stop it from diminishing. But I can't make it, I can't charge it really, right? I can stave off its energy depletion, but I can't add energy back. So I needed something that could do that, so that's what I did. It's probably the most expensive battery pack that I've bought. It's $110. I'll put a link in the show notes. It does have a 27-watt charger, like you would use on a MacBook, I'm told. And it can charge via USB-C, so it'll charge up a little bit faster than it would if you were plugging in over the standard USB, so that's something. Jim,
our listeners can't see this, but Jim was showing us his stack of anchor batteries as Brian starts to talk about this article. And I was going to, and he, I think he had about four stacked together in his hand. And I was going to say, Jim, if you just had a few more, you could build yourself a new house.
So, yeah, so that was, I was, as Brian was talking, I was collecting them from around my desk. I don't carry them all with me, but I'll buy one when they go on sale. So I was just pulling up on Amazon to look and see which one of them has USB-C on it. And so I was looking to see which one it was that I had that did USB-C. So
which one do you have? Do you know?
So yeah, I have a, it's an AUKEY on that one. It's not Anker. And it is the AUKEY 30,000 milliampere portable charger, quick charge 3. I don't know that it has a number. But it's the AUKEY 30,000 that's got USB-C and two USB outputs built in there. It runs at, I'm trying to find the spec on here, 5 volts, 3 amps. I don't know that this one would do a MacBook, like you were saying, the high-powered one.
Yeah, this one that Brian was talking about will charge a MacBook Pro 13 1.2 times.
Power.
That's nuts. Now, mine, I don't think mine will do a MacBook. I don't think the output is that high. It's still a kind of an iPad level charger, but not MacBook level charger. But it does have USB-C. That's the one I was carrying for a while. But man, it's such a brick. And then they had like a super anchor sale here a month or two ago, and I bought a 20,000 that's a whole lot smaller that just has USB ports, no USB-C, but still, that's the one that I keep in my bag now. And then I've got a super tiny one that fits in my pocket that I use just when I'm out with my phone if I want something. I don't always have it out, but if I'm going out somewhere and I know I'm going to be gone all day, I'll bring that one out with me.
Yeah, this battery is 1.2 pounds, so it's not light. But the fact that you can charge a MacBook Pro 13 1.2 times is kind of neat. I just want to carry one battery.
This one says it's 20 ounces. So what? That's about the same, 1.2 pounds, right? 20 ounces is,
yeah, roughly
one and a quarter pound. Yeah.
But yeah, I need those. I need those battery packs, particularly when I travel. They're super useful to just be able to top yourself off if you need it with some power. And particularly if I'm on a plane with the like when I'm flying back and forth between one coast and the other. The in-flight power in the seat doesn't provide enough juice to be able to charge an iPad, as I've discovered.
Nothing like the satisfaction of being able to top yourself off.
So the problem is, I end up with a lot of technology that I obsolete with something better, and I need a way to get rid of it because I'm going through, my basement is a mess right now, but I've been cleaning up, picking up stuff up, throwing stuff away, being sort of merciless in cleaning. But I have a lot of tech that I just don't need, and I don't want to use eBay, and I don't want to use Craigslist. I just need...
Come on, man!
Craigslist is just too creepy, man. Just too creepy. I've never had... The few times that I've tried to use it, it was just not good.
I kind of went through the same thing last week. I threw out 7 or 8 5-port 10-100 switches, about 15 10-100 PCI... Nicks.
That's really old stuff, Brad. That's not like an old Apple Watch. That's like a 1998 circa network card.
Well, what's funny is some of these network cards were still in the box, still shrink wrapped. They were in the top of my son's closet where I have put like old yearbooks and, you know, some car radio boxes and stuff. And like, there were car radio boxes, of course, because I always replace my own car audio. There were car radio boxes in there from cars that I have sold or wrecked, you know, 10 years ago. So it was definitely time to do that.
I found a PCMCICS card from 2000 that went into those types of slots on the laptop when I was cleaning it out on Friday. And I thought to myself, I literally haven't seen this in 15 years. It was sitting in an old computer bag that was covered in under an inch of dust. I found business cards from 13 years ago. I found, it was like a relic. It was like something lost in time. All my pens, all my notes from 7 years ago. It was quite the sight.
So my solution for old tech is twofold. First off, I have 3 nephews in Mississippi. Last year for Christmas, they all got goodie bags, each with a different set of headphones and chargers. And I think I put a flashlight in each one of them, a little battery pack. I mean, like every one of them had like a little different pack of stuff. And then the other thing I do is I date and break up with women who end up with an old battery or headphones or things like that. And that comes in handy if you're looking to get rid of stuff, or it's kind of a pain if you're not looking to get rid of stuff. And then you realize that, where is that old Microsoft Arc Natural keyboard that I had? And you realize that you gave it to somebody you dated and you haven't gotten it back.
Here you go, nephew. Here's an old girlfriend. Merry Christmas.
Jim's performing a public service by donating stuff to people in need, apparently. I feel bad about throwing stuff away. I don't want to throw away.
Oh, they need it and I give it. Oh.
I don't want to throw away old technology because I know that it's not right for that stuff to end up in a landfill. What I need is a nerd of some sort who scavenges old technology. And I've known quite a few of these in my career. People who cobble things together like some sort of MacGyver stranded on a lost world, where they can, hey, I could use a Switch from 1998. Hey, I could use a network card from 1992. Because I have tons of this stuff that I just need to get away, and I want to just throw it away because it has no real use to anybody and I don't want to wait. But I hate doing that because I don't want that stuff ending up in a landfill. And I know there are things out there like FreeCycle that you can use where you post, but it's like, hey, weirdos, come to my house and get my free stuff. It's like,
that's even worse than Craigslist.
That is worse than, it can be. What I think I should do is just go and set up shop somewhere like in a park or in a public place. But then again, that's almost as bad as using Craigslist. But at least with FreeCycle, you're going to get people who will just come. Like, I would give this stuff away. I don't even need to make any profit. I just want someone to take it.
FreeCycle will be like, what? You got an old mattress? How old is it?
How many times has it been peed on?
Including today? Three.
If I'm gonna name drop, but if you only lived in a city with Havard, you could probably get rid of like half of that stuff.
Havard was actually the person on my mind when I was saying this, of the person who runs a museum of old things, and I know he listens to the show. So hi, Havard. But yeah, he would definitely make use of that. In fact, Havard, if you are listening, if you just DM me your address, I will find a way to ship this to you somehow as cheaply as possible. I will send you a goodie bag filled with things. It'll be great. Just please take it off my hands so it doesn't have to end up in a landfill, or I don't get shot or mugged by some crazy person trying to take it off my hands.
Just as a PSA, if you have a old laptop or something you want to throw out and you own a small Phillips head screwdriver, you can actually take the battery out and take it to Lowe's and they will recycle it in a green method, and then take a drill and drill through the hard drive and then just throw the laptop in the garbage.
Is this the same Lowe's where I tried to recycle fluorescent lighting and they told me we don't do that here and they made me leave and go somewhere else? That same Lowe's?
Possibly, but I have taken, just because I work on laptops for people, I have taken at least 15 to 20 old batteries to Lowe's, you know, 5 miles from my house, and they take them. So
also Best Buy. If you go into a Best Buy or Staples or something like that, a lot of times you'll see bins at the front of the store. Usually as you walk in at my local Best Buy, where you can drop off old cell phones. I'm talking clamshell flip phones from 15. Like, I still have some of those laying around in boxes from relatives who were like, hey, I was going to throw this away. And I'm like, it shouldn't end up in a landfill. And then my house becomes the landfill. So,
hey, if you've got one of those that works on Verizon that's got really big buttons, I could use one for my grandma if I ever want to switch her off of AT&T.
Jitterbug.
Jitterbug.
All right, let's see what else. I got a Ring Video Doorbell 2 this week that should be here Monday. And I think I've mentioned this on the show before, but my doorbell saga is one that continues to haunt me to this day. The previous owners of my house did not have a doorbell. Not only that, it wasn't really set up for a nice place to put the transformer that wasn't obnoxious. So this was one of those things where my doorbell was going to have to be off to the side. So you get like a hip crotch view from the wrong side to see people. And with a Ring Video Doorbell 2, it actually has a battery that I'm told can last 3 to 4 months on a charge, depending on how many visitors you get, which I don't get a lot. So that should be fine. And I'm excited about that. Finally, I'm going to have a Ring doorbell. And then again, I still have a Ring Video Doorbell, the original, the Pro, the wired version that I can't use, that I bought off eBay that I can't return a few months ago, so I got to sell that. If you know anyone who's in the market for a Ring Video Pro, the nice wired version, let me know. I can hook them up with a really good rate because I can't use this one. But I will be using the Ring Video Doorbell too, and I'm pretty psyched about that.
That one's not going to end up in Havard's bag of crap?
No, Havard would have to pay a nice bonus to be able to get the Ring. That one still has some good market value. This is if I keep it for another 10 years, then he could have it. But
Craigslist, man, I'm telling you, Craigslist. There's somebody out there that wants that, Brian. And he's scouring Craigslist this morning looking for that exact model. You're in a big city. It works. Just put it out there. Meet him at a Starbucks. I promise. It works.
I may try that. I do have a bite already from an old coworker who I told him the price I was considering parting it with it for, and which is slightly better than Black Friday deals price. And I may have a buyer already, but if that falls through, I'll definitely put it on Craigslist or something, and just to see if it's still as bad as it used to be. I take it neither of you guys have the Ring doorbells.
I just have a traditional doorbell, but I think I disconnected the wire on it just because it kind of triggers my misophonia to just send me into a rage. So
who's at the door?
I'd rather just hear, who is it? So I'd rather just hear the little door knocker, or just, you know, as people like, I can't ring the doorbell, I might as well leave.
I live in a 100-year-old building downtown, so there is a system downstairs where somebody can call up and I can let them in, but I don't get to see their picture or anything, so.
If you go back to suburbia anytime, Jim, I think you'll dig the Ring. The Ring's actually pretty cool.
Never.
Oh, it'll happen, my friend. It'll happen. Now, I'm excited about this. I have access, like I say, to a friend's, and I see the way folks come up, and just being able, when you're remote, if somebody comes creeping around your door, being able to talk to them should be pretty neat. Ironically, the one thing that I've read online is that it's not great at being an actual doorbell. Like, if you press the button, it takes like 5 seconds for it to ring, is what I'm told, which seems kind of useless. You actually get the notification on your phone before you actually hear the thing ring, which, you know what, for me would be fine because I really don't need it.
That's
much
funny.
Anyway.
That's like, you know, before when everybody loved their iPhones, we were like, it's actually not a very good phone. You know, like, it's called the iPhone, but it does everything else better than it does the phone. Your doorbell does everything else except for the doorbelling part.
I need a people keeper awayer. That's what I really need it to be, more so than anything. Something where somebody comes to my door to sell me something or give me some religious pamphlet, I can say, no, we're all good here, please go away.
I think the ideal thing would be something with two-way video, or at least make them think it's two-way video, and just say, I'll be there in a second, and it shows a little snippet of you walking toward your door in just your underwear, and see if they run.
Or actually, I would like it to be like the movie The Ring, where they do that, and you see the creepy little girl crawling out of like a well or something and going toward the door. I think that would be better.
That would be it. There you go, Brian. You have, yes. That's even scarier than me in my underwear.
A satanic demonic, I would be right there.
Or you need like just a Vietnam era punji stick booby trap, just to keep people away from the door. Then they can't even get to the door to ring the doorbell.
That might make me the target of law enforcement, so that probably wouldn't be a good idea.
It's been a couple of weeks ago, but I saw it was a post on Reddit that it climbed way up the top of the charts. Evidently, there was some kid going around a neighborhood selling little wooden plaques with just a wire tied on the top that said, like, no soliciting or something like that. And somebody posted it on Reddit and said, this kid's making a killing selling these for $5 a pop. He knocks on people's door and he sells them a no soliciting sign to go on their door. And they're like, he's making a killing.
That is a really good idea, I suppose. It'd be the last solicitor you get. So pretty smart. Enterprising kid, better than the lemonade stand. Let's see, what else is going on? Been kind of a slow, you know, summer is always slow for this type of stuff, slow news week. So I guess the iOS version of Waze now allows for custom voices, so you can record yourself giving directions. This popped up on Android, I noticed, a couple months ago, and I've been waiting so long for it to come to iOS. I'm glad it did. Friday afternoon, my wife wasn't feeling well, so I snuck off with her iPhone, and I made all of her custom notifications me, and they greet her specifically. So I didn't tell her, and Monday, when she does her normal commute, she's going to be in for quite a treat when it starts addressing her by name, and she gets me telling her where to go. Of course, she probably won't listen to any of her directions if I'm telling her, so we'll see if she still gets to work on time.
Hey, honey, watch out for that pothole over there. Oh, yeah, and don't forget about this. Oh, yeah, and then there's that other thing. She throws her phone out the window.
Did you remember to pay the gas bill? And also, in 1 mile, turn left. Oh, the fun that you can have. You can also share your voice with other people, too. So that I think that's kind of nice. You can share a link and other people can do it. So I don't know that anyone's going to use that, but hey, it's kind of neat.
I just put a link to the no soliciting thing in the show notes. I don't know if that's the original post, but that's the post.
So let's see. The DirecTV Now service is getting a cloud DVR. Jim, you want to talk about that?
Yeah, so I thought that was, you know, mildly interesting, I guess. It was like, we need some fill some time, and I guess I'm mildly excited, if you can be mildly excited about that kind of thing. I have DirecTV Now. I was a early adopter, one of those, hey, if you subscribe now, you get it for whatever it is, $35, $40, and you get the whole big bundle package. I think we talked about that. Go listen to some old shows. It's there. But I haven't canceled because I want it for football season, and I've got a good rate, and I've actually found myself, I was telling you guys this week, I found myself at home, you know, with 30 minutes or an hour before I'm going to go do this or do that, I actually just sit down and channel surf, which I can't remember doing that much, you know, over the last, at least 2 years since I moved into the apartment, because I haven't had channels to surf, because, you know. And besides, you know, it's the equivalent of going to YouTube and spending 30 minutes screwing around. Now I do it on DirecTV Now, and I just find stuff to watch. And I've found a couple of neat little shows. I'm almost ashamed to say I really like the cooking competition shows where they've got to, like, hurry up and make stuff with, you know, stupid ingredients like duck vagina or something.
Two great shows that do that real quick. There's a show that I think it's on History Channel where they make old weapons. It's called Forged in Fire. That's a great show.
That is the exact one I was going to next, Brad.
And so I'm sorry to jump the gun on it. And then there's another one that's the British Baking Show. That one's great.
You just nailed the two best ones right there in the head. Brad is a connoisseur of these shows. That Forged and Fired, I swear I stumbled across it, and now I'm just like, okay, where can I watch more of these? Because that is just so cool. It's like blacksmiths, and they just say, build a saber or build a hunting dagger or something like this. And they have like an Asian guy on there that he tests the weapons. It's a really good show. And then that British Baking one, yeah, it's another one that's just, I don't know why or how it keeps my attention, but if it's on, I just stop and I'm like, okay, this is what I'm watching. And so now I couldn't even tell you what station these things come on. I just browse and I see that they're on and I watch them. So if I actually had a DVR built into DirecTV, which is my mild excitement about this, is I could mark these and have them when I want to watch them, just, you know, when I'm have a 30 minutes at home and I want to do something. So that was my mild excitement.
You know what people have been using a DVR for since 15, 17, 20 years ago. No, I get you.
It's a TiVo, like devotee. You know, I was early on TiVo, way early. And I had one for years until it was cool not to have a TiVo. And so, you know, I guess I miss it.
To put a little more color on it, I think really specifically what you're talking about is, since I've made the transition to being a cord cutter, I actually did keep Dish Network until, I don't know, 2016. So I had a DVR for the last, I don't know, 10, 15 years, using that pretty regular, actually. And since making the transition to a cord cutter, you know, I guess the Sling service, which is, of course, owned by Dish, now has that. But before, they didn't. And they depended purely on the on-demand functionality, which was okay. It was all right. And that's what DirecTV Now has been doing. But as Jim can attest from his designated survivor experience, it takes a week or more for that stuff to end up on demand on DirecTV, which is really kind of annoying. If it were the next day, oh, it'd be perfect. You wouldn't even need a cloud DVR. But for some reason, they don't there is like a perpetual week or more delay in getting shows on there, which is super annoying. So the only reason I've kept PlayStation View around, in addition to DirecTV Now, is because they actually do have a cloud DVR. And it seems like their on-demand gets stuff a little bit quicker, but I'm not entirely sure. But yeah, when they get the cloud DVR functionality, plus PlayStation View is about to raise its prices, so I'm about to dump them and just stick with DirecTV Now purely. But I have a feeling that the... Because like you, I'm one of the early adopters. I'm paying like the $35 a month for the 100-plus channels. I have a feeling as soon as they introduce that functionality, the price is going up, which is fine. They're at least introducing something new and not just saying, okay, introductory pricing's over, back to the higher prices. as long as I get something out of it, I don't think I'll mind as much. So that's what I'm hoping for. But yes, I make use of the cloud DVR and PlayStation View like all the time. I like skippable commercials.
That's the other thing is I'm watching commercials for the first time in a long time either. Last weekend, we were watching something on the DirecTV. A friend was just laughing at me because I was audibly and physically laughing at commercials that were on and being amused by the commercials. And she was like, "You're actually enjoying this." I'm like, "Yeah, it's been a while. They're kind of interesting or they're funny or I'm singing along with the jingles or something. I don't know. Maybe I was drunk."
So you got rid of you didn't just cord cut, you cord cut the cord cut, right, Brad? You're not doing any of the DirecTV Now or PlayStation View or any of those anymore, right?
No, I canceled all of those services. I do still have Prime Video, of course, and I did subscribe to HBO through that, and I still have Netflix, but everything else is canceled. I canceled Hulu. I don't have any of the bundling services like you mentioned, you know, Sling, PlayStation View, whatever. And it's mainly because we just weren't watching them, you know, and I don't know if it's because it's sort of a seasonal thing. You know, you watch two or three shows like in a fall season or a spring season, and once they're over, you just kind of don't watch TV. And that's kind of how we do around our house. We sort of watch TV seasonally. So, I mean, that's the nice thing about PlayStation View or Sling is where you can fire it up for 3 or 4 months and then cancel it and not suffer any sort of cancellation fee or any sort of sign-up fee when you resubscribe.
The thing I like about DirecTV Now is that to get HBO, it's $5 a month. Cinemax, $5 a month. I guess because now AT&T, pretty much with the Time Warner thing, they're going to own HBO if they don't already. I think there was a note saying that AT&T wanted Game of Thrones cut down to 30 minutes from an hour just because it was better for streaming. Which is nuts to think, hey, now that they own HBO, they could probably make that happen, but, you know, not likely.
Well, that would only work if they doubled the shows to, say, 20 shows instead of 10 shows, if they were going to chop the content in half like that.
Or just get rid of all this extraneous content, they would say. But still, no, the cheapest place to get HBO is through the DirecTV Now thing, so $5 a month, which I was doing HBO Now, I think, was what I was doing before it was 15. And normally, if it was just 10, I would have probably kept it. But it's like, huh, I can't beat $5 a month. So I switched.
Same here, Brian. I had the 15, and now I just have the $5 add-on. So Brad, how are you going to watch stuff like Naked and Afraid without, like, that's another one that I found that's a completely horrible show, but somehow I just can't stop watching it.
I think I watched one or two episodes of that. It didn't really interest me too much. And I can watch stuff like the British Baking Show through my PBS affiliate, which I have an HD antenna for.
I swear, that Naked and Afraid show, if they would put that on cable and not blur, first off, it would make post-processing a lot easier. Brian, you think you have a problem with editing the audio of the podcast? Try making a TV show that comes on cable where you can't show nipple, and they walk around naked the whole freaking show, and somebody's got to edit that, like... I think some editor in Hollywood was just like, how do we make more editing jobs? We're like, hey, let's have TV shows where people are naked, but they're not supposed to, we can't show it naked, and we'll create tons of editing jobs that way. I'm pretty sure that's how that show came about.
Well, I think that's all I had to talk about. You guys have anything else?
So I put one more link in the show notes. We've got a little time here, and I wanted to give a shout out to a new game. Well, it's not a new game, but it's a new to me game that I've been playing for the last month or two on iOS, and it's available on Android as well. And it's called Munzee, and it's a virtual geocaching game that is, I just think the effort and the work that they put into this game from a community standpoint is just really amazing. They have all kind of gatherings in different cities. They have like anniversaries and birthday parties for the game and for the players. And so the idea is you can have a virtual item that you can go to someplace and find. Or the difference with Munzee is it actually uses QR codes as well. And it's a small sticker that, and some people might hate this, but you know, you could stick it on the back of like a stop sign. And, you know, somebody actually goes up and scans it and they get credit for it. And whoever placed it there gets credit for it. And there's all kind of tie-ins with the game as far as they have what they call clan wars, where you can join like a 10-member team. And if that team does a certain amount of finding things or placing things over that month, they get prizes like free stickers or things like that. Me and my nephew played when we were in D.C., and D.C. was basically covered in nothing but the virtual. Obviously, you don't want stickers everywhere in D.C., so it was all the virtual items to find. But it just, I mean, he loved it. It was just something to kind of add into the, I mean, it's a World War II memorial, and that should be enough. But when you're 13, kind of gamifying things is really what you've done with something like Munzee. It's a lot of fun. I've played several of these games. Obviously, we've talked about my Pokemon addiction here. And then I've played another one called Wallaby, which actually, that's how I found Munzee. Munzee bought another game I was playing, and so I kind of switched over to Munzee. And I still play the other, but just the, I mean, the app is very well done. The website is well done. The community is really strong. So if, you know, if you're into that kind of thing, the geocaching, you know, just exploring, they do all kind of things with trails, and they set up gardens in cities where they actually make huge designs. Like if you look at it on a map, you can see like a huge fleur-de-lis down in New Orleans, or I'll put a link in the show notes here to an image. One of the places in Dallas made a huge purple Barney on the ground with the virtual, like the little placement icons on a map. If you look at it from way overhead, it's this huge, like, I don't know, six city block Barney figure that they made out of the items that you would go collect from there. So I don't know. It's a lot of fun. I've had a lot of fun with it myself and with Caden on vacation. So I just wanted to give them a shout out here. They're based in Dallas. It's based out of McKinney, Texas. Just a lot of fun, something to do. If you have kids, or even if you don't have kids, you know, I'm just a big kid. So check it out. Munzee, we'll put a link in the show notes.
Do you do actual geocaching, Jim, too, in addition to this or not?
I've done that as well. The thing with that is there's just not the volume of items with real geocaching. I mean, you can go to some trails and you can go here and go there. Munzee is everywhere. I mean, they're all over downtown here. They're all over St. Louis. I saw them when I went through New Orleans. I kind of scanned the map just to see what was down there. I was shocked. Out of all these games I played, Munzee's definitely got a huge following. So any city I've been in has a lot of things to do. They're ramping up all kind of special treasures you can find, add-on things. Like there's one where I caught like I captured like a fireman or something. And then once you capture that, it sprays out and like two or three other items that are close by become on fire, and you get more points if you go get those items too, just, you know, that kind of thing. It's just really well done, and I've enjoyed it. So it's free to play. There's like a $30 a year if you want all the features with the app and that kind of thing. The stickers, you can buy them from Munzee, or they do make it where you can create a sheet on their website and print them on like vinyl sticker paper at your house, so you can print your own. You don't have to buy it from them. So yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Sounds pretty neat. All right, until next time, later fellas.
Later fellas.
Later fellas.
Please visit infiniteloopback.com for show notes and previous episodes. You can find us on Twitter. The Twitter handle for the show is @infinloopback. That's @infinloopback. I am @BrianB. That's @BrianB. Jim is @BigJim. That's @BigJim. And Brad is @MeesterIdol. That's @MeesterIdle. Thanks for listening, and we hope to talk to you next time.